Hey, thanks for listening to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Before we get too deep into this thing, I want to thank the folks at Racetech, racetech.com, authorized service centers all across America, privateer proven, gold valves. They got suspension parts as well. Get your right spring rate done. Get a revalve. Get a oil change. Get motor work done. All of it. Racetech.com. They've been in business since, dude, the early 80s or something. And the best part is if you tell me listen to Pulp MX, the guys at Racetech and Racetech.com will give you a discount. That's right. It's that easy. Get some motor work done. Get suspension work done. Anything like that. Racetech.com. The home for suspension. All right. On to the show.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Yeah, welcome everybody to Fly Racing Racer X Southwick MX Review Pod. You know what they say, better late than never. And we're doing it for you, people. We apologize. We'll get into this. Mostly JT's fault. But thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. It's been fantastic. Lots to talk about when it comes to Southwick. Lots to talk about when it comes to Fly Racing as well. If you wear Fly Racing, there's chances that you will do what Chance Hymus did at Lakewood, which is sweep your day of motos and lead every lap. And that's how good Fly Racing is. RJ Hampshire, some guy named Brayton, Dean Wilson, Cooper Webb, maybe you heard of him. Flyracing.com, please check them out on the web. And kinetic mesh stuff is where you what you want nowadays because it's so balls hot everywhere. And it's simply the lightest, coolest gear out there. It's got the BOA closure system on it. Formula helmet's amazing. Thank you to folks at Fly Racing for sponsoring this podcast. Great company, great guys. And use the code PULPMX when you check out from flyracing.com to save on that. And we'll tell you more about Renthal and Maxxis, motorsport.com, Brunt work boots later on in the show, of course, but lots to get into when it comes to Southwick. We might make this a little abbreviated than usual for obvious reasons. But first up, he was in the booth this weekend with some guy named James Stewart and did a fantastic job. Also, Fenway Park yesterday with myself watching the Toronto Blue Jays take the series from the Boston Red Sox. He tipped a man dressed as a bear and much more to talk about when it comes to this. The Jason Wygant. What's up, Weege?
Yeah, we knew we'd be busy on Sunday, so we had a preemptive plan to do this show Saturday night, which we did, actually, from our hotels on Saturday night. And then what the hell happened, Steve?
We had a bit of a technical snafu on this program's fault, not my fault. Not Weege's fault, maybe JT's fault. But we did about 7 minutes off the top, and it's gone forever now. So we're back. Speaking of JT, from Fly Racing, flyracing.com, two-time Montreal Supercross winner, the Jason Thomas.
Yep, I'm here. And you know what? I think there are probably several times where the guy that waves the checkered flag told me the same thing, better late than never, when I finally came across, finished the moto. So I know they're feeling well.
And this is not really JT's fault. I just like to say that. It really is. We went to Fenway Park. We had a great time. We got on the mound thanks to our guy Mike Sweeney. He got us with the groundskeeper from the Red Sox. A Red Sox player hooked us up with tickets thanks to Chris Betts.
Yeah.
Dude, we're pretty much rolling in Fenway. It's great.
JT, we're there half hour before the game in our seats, and Steve's like, this groundskeeper says he's going to get us on the field. Let me call him. He calls, and we look to the pitcher's mound, and the guy fixing up the pitcher's mound takes a phone out of his pocket, and Steve is talking to him, and he's talking to Steve, and we're just watching him. And then we go down there, and security's like, whoa, 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 you got tickets? And then you just drop his name, Steve.
His
right?
nickname. I dropped his nickname, Teach. I'm
Steve
like, we're with Teach.
And these two security guards are like, oh, no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had the run of the place.
Weege, have you ever noticed that Steve does this thing where, like, you know, Chris Betts goes out of his way, kind of his heart, arranges this all, and then Steve just, like, keeps pressing? Like, do you think we could get some batting practice in? Do you think we could get into the locker rooms? Do you think that we could eat the pregame meal with them? Like, this is what Steve does. I mean, I'll be honest, it drives me absolutely batshit crazy when I'm reading these texts and I just keep my mouth shut.
I know it does. That's why I do it. Yep.
Well, the player that Betts hooked us up with, the player that got us tickets, apparently, did he play for the Long Beach Dirtbags?
Yeah, he was a dirtbag. Yeah, he's a dirtbag.
So, JT, Steve's justification is they're teammates. Because, as you know, Steve was a member of the team.
Yeah, we were all teammates. Yeah. He hit a triple on the Jays. Didn't score, though. The Jays stranded him on third. So I was happy he had hit a triple, but yet the Jays won. So, and Vlad Guerrero went deep over the monster. It's fantastic. But it's funny. We're hooked up by the Red Sox player. Red Sox groundkeeper got us on the mound for a photo. And Weege's kid is like, I hate the Red Sox. I still hate the Red Sox. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was glad they lost. It was good. And we sat around for the Sweet Caroline and all their horrific, terrible traditions. Get out of here with that.
And so my wife can't stand Weege's cheapness, JT, as you know. So she told me, you tell Lane, that's his name, right, Lane? Yeah.
Very good.
You tell Lane that you will buy him whatever he wants because his dad won't. So I'm like, okay, all right. Like, that seems a bit of a power move. So I checked with the dad, Weege, if he was okay with me buying Lane whatever he wanted. The dad was like, yeah, that's awesome. Great. Saves me money.
Yeah, free stuff.
Right. So then I said, what do you want from the souvenir stand? And Lane's like, I hate the Red Sox. I don't want anything. And I'm like, oh, sweet. Okay. All right. Never mind.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, everybody wins. I kept my money and he didn't get anything from the Red Sox. So
they didn't have any Aaron Judge bobbleheads or anything.
No.
Maybe you could take a bat to them.
I was there years ago and they had a shirt outside of Fenway. So I don't think it was authorized by the Red Sox, but it said Jeter sucks Randy's Johnson. That was on a T-shirt. I don't believe it was authorized by the Red Sox.
Not official MLB apparel.
But you can buy things like that outside of the park. So, All right. Lots to get into when it comes to Southwick. Let's get into it. JT's got to leave at some point. And this is not the Jorge Prado pod, but we may or may not speak about Jorge Prado a little bit because he gave an unbelievable post-race interview. All right, Jet Lawrence, led every lap, 1-1. Is he as good as James and Ricky in the sand? Somebody was just saying that to me on Twitter, and I was like, maybe this is an old man walking uphill to school both ways thing. But I am a believer in training gets better, the bikes get better, the riders get better. Like, Eli Tomac would kick Bob Hanna's ass just because of evolution. I'm a believer in that. But James Stewart and Ricky Carmichael went so damn fast at Southwick. Maybe Jet's there.
I don't have a strong opinion on better, but different. I do think it's different. Like, if you watch, go back and we all saw clips. You know, everybody loved to post clips all week of the James and Ricky battles and how on the edge Ricky was all the time. Jet doesn't look like that at all. So, you know, it leads to the conversation of, is Jet on his limit, even though he just looks like he's so smooth and in control? Because you could see Ricky and James are on the limit. Like, there is visual evidence of them being on the limit. So it optically, it looks like they're going so much faster because of how many risks they're taking. But I just wonder if that's deceiving, because maybe Jet is just doing it a different way and it's just as impressive and just as fast and all those things. So better or worse, I don't really have it. It just, to me, the interesting conversation is about how different they go about it. And they're both, all three of them were just unbelievable in the sand.
Weege.
Oh, my opinion on this.
Yeah, sure. Please.
Yeah. The hardest thing, every sport evolves. I hate when I hear people say that the NBA players today are soft. Like, bro, good luck with your 1980s defense when all five guys can shoot from 28 feet. They would have nothing. They would get, they're blown off the court. They don't get dumber when people are applying every minute of their lives to trying to figure out a way to do it better times 30 years. And then motocross, even worse, because we don't have limits on the motorcycles. So the bikes keep getting better and better and better and better. I think part of the reason it looks so nuts when you watch 06, RC and Stu going at it, they're like the first guys to ride 450s to their limits. What, 450s were only 2 years in for those manufacturers at that point? 1 year for Cowie? So just imagine how much better Jet's Honda is with 20 years of this is probably how a 450 is supposed to work. So you can't even compare it. You can't even compare it. But I will say that at this point, I will just remove all limits to how good Jet Lawrence is. And if you don't like it, you can just look at the results.
It's been an evolution, right? Paula, he was good. Hangtown, he got beat. Then he won the next moto. Still not happy with the bike. We get to Lakewood. That both brothers are like, we tested, we're happier. Yep. You know, High Point, mudder, weather, and week off, and here we go. Hunter was
There's
great.
A lot of theories,
Jet was great.
Why he had that bigger lead, though. And I think we thought, well, one, he knew Tomac would be really good at Southwick, so maybe he needed to go, you know, we don't know how close to the limit he normally is, but maybe he was like, I got to get a bigger lead earlier just in case. Or, yeah, he's getting stronger coming back from the ACL, or they're getting used to the changes of the bike. Jet's explanation in the press conference is you can't on a sand track, you know, ride 2% harder or 3% slower. Or he's like, there's a speed that works, and he's like, I just have to go that speed. If I try to go slower and, you know, hold that 2-second gap like normal, I think it was maybe going to be worse. I mean, JT, you've ridden plenty of sand. There's a moment where as you go slower, then you just start bouncing off stuff. So I don't even know if it was those things getting better. I think this for this track, he had to go his speed, and his speed is good.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily incorrect or anything. He's certainly kind of judging, and he's been pretty transparent over the years. Like, he's not a guy that plays coy about what's happening, almost to a fault. He kind of tells you what's happening.
Yeah.
But I would also say that when I'm just watching him, he looked more assertive than he had been. And that could be a subconscious thing. It doesn't have to be like, yeah, man, I just felt way better. Like I could really feel when it come around. It doesn't have to be that way. It could just be body and mind and everything getting closer, and he's able to push harder and not even really realizing it. It's just kind of his body's allowing him to go faster. But just watching him, he just looked like he had more confidence in what he was doing. And he wasn't really waiting around for anybody, which is what I kind of saw at other rounds. He'd win the race, but he wasn't in a hurry to kind of take off from anybody. He was almost like holding people up at times. And I went back and watched Thunder Valley today just to kind of get context. And there was a lot of times where he wasn't the fastest rider on the racetrack. And there was no doubt at any point this weekend where he was the fastest guy.
Yeah, it was pretty damn impressive for sure. And yeah, we may like Sexton's coming back at Redbud. And I think Sexton will be right there in this group with everyone else. But it's a real possibility he runs the table. Seriously, he runs the table. It's a real possibility.
It's more real now.
Yeah. I am more confident now than I was. Like before,
of course.
Eh.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I like watching him this weekend, and maybe Redbud changes it, right? Like Redbud could be like, oh, well, this is, you know, we're back to, it was just sand and it was whatever. But he just looked so much more in control of the situation than he had been. And he's been winning, but it was kind of like he was just kind of gaming the system, finding ways. This weekend, he didn't have to do any of that. And that's the scariest thing for the rest of these guys is he didn't have to use all these other ways and, you know, come from a bad start in the mud or any of that. He didn't have to do any of that. It was just get the start, check out, gone. Nobody can even come close.
We've heard every single 250 rider tell us over the years, I think a 450 suits my style better. Every single guy says that. Yeah. Always happens. And, Hunter Lawrence, he's way better on a 450 than he ever was on a 250, I think. And he won the national championship. He is really good. Caught and passed Tomac second moto. Gets second again. He's still got this unbelievable, never been out of the top five streak in 450 motocross. And like Hunter is taking it to a new level. JT, the missing 7 minutes that will no one will ever hear from Saturday night, I think you made a good point, a rare good point by you.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, if you can remember what you talked about, yes, please go ahead with Hunter.
Refresh my memory because I was pretty tired.
It was, first of all, it was my point. I would like the credit.
Oh, wait,
it
what?
Was, bro, Hunter Lawrence just beat Eli Tomac straight up at Southwick. He passed him and beat him in the second moto.
No, that was a good point, but that wasn't JT's point.
Oh, this is not the one you're going with?
No, but that's, go ahead, Weege. No, this is your point.
Who on earth, including maybe Hunter himself, in like 2019, say, had that as Hunter's ceiling. Like, Jet is an alien. Jet is a freakazoid. You might make the argument that Hunter could be the second best 450 guy. And maybe even in Supercross he will be at some point as well. I can't rule that out. Who on earth thought that he was going to get even close to this level? Like, it's unbelievable how far he's come. That was my point.
Okay, and honestly, JT's point was similar. But JT, you went back to MX2 and sort of said no one had kind of claimed this as Hunter's spot as a 450 guy catching and passing Eli Tomac. Like, he's good. He's always been solid. He's a national champion. So is Aaron Plessinger. You know, so is other riders. But, yeah, your point was more – I guess it was sort of similar to Weegis, yes.
Well, yeah, and I think I just kind of expanded on what Weegis saying. You know, like, when Hunter came over, it wasn't – he wasn't a shoo-in to have success. You know, Geico kind of took a flyer on him. Like, he had shown flashes of brilliance. Matterly in 17 at Motocross of Nations. Like, there were motos that he was really good. The WWMX in Jacksonville, that USGP, he was really
good. The one where I helped Eli win.
Yeah, you were a hurling savior that day. Or no, a Tomac savior.
Tomac savior.
Yeah. But his best finish in an overall series was 8th. You know, this was not like, don't worry about him. He's going to be awesome. And ever since he came over, like, 2020 was kind of a disaster. Kept hurting his shoulder. We all know the story where he was going to retire. Like, it just wasn't working. And ever since then, like, it's just been a steady climb this way. Like, up and to the right. Like, better and better and better and better and better. And championships along the way. Moves to 450. Continues to get better. And it's just gotten better. And, like, so kudos to him, because this has not been a flash in the pan. This has been the product of a lot of hard work and a lot of improvement. And this, it's rare that you see, and I know that's Weege's point, it's rare that you see a guy come from kind of nowhere. You know, like, okay, he was on Geico Honda. He wasn't a nobody. He wasn't doing much. And now he's one of the best riders in the world. Like, that is that's a pretty unique thing to watch.
I will say, Hunter told me a few times in the Geico days, man, our bike's not that good. Our bike's just not that good. Like, I wish it was better. And then I'm like, okay, buddy, sure. Yeah, whatever. But then when they got to the factory Honda, when Geico folded, they took a step up. I think the team talked about how they got the bikes better because they were able to focus on two guys instead of eight guys and different personnel and all of that. And Hunter said, I think he proved his point back in the Geico days, where he was like, dude, my bike's not that good. And he got a better bike, and then he kept going. And great race at Southwick. I did not have him catching and passing Eli Tomac in the second moto at Southwick, and not only passing him, but putting, I think, 8 seconds on him.
And I'll be real,
holy
honest,
shit.
Neither did Eli Tomac.
Neither did
Eli Tomac.
No.
I'm telling you right now, like, when he passed him and aggressively passed him, and then pulled away, Eli was like, wait, what? Like, I promise you, this was all very surprising to Eli as well. I know we're going to get to Eli, but that to me was a little disappointing from Eli. I just thought he would have more.
You think of the guys that have done that to Eli, and not the weirdo Eli races where the back of his bike's too low and it gets arm pump. But I'm saying,
or he spends the week pounding a fence in.
Yeah, or doing military.
Yeah.
Military training with his brother or whatever. Although, I don't know if you guys heard this. You folks need to watch the press conferences on YouTube, because what's the gold is, for some reason, they hit record like 2 minutes before it starts, but you can overhear them on the mics, the riders chatting. So this week, it was Tomac telling the Lawrence brothers that some bull got crazy at his ranch and almost took his wife out. And as soon as he gets home, he's got to bust this bull for almost crushing his wife or something. There's hot mics every time.
Does he just stare at the bull? How does he bust it? Does he just stare at it?
It's Eli Tomac. If there's one person that could tear it down.
It's the same stare he gave Lewis. The same look he gave Lewis.
Hopefully he doesn't have that shirt that Weege has on.
Yeah.
Pops a little bit. So maybe we'll find out that Eli, before Southwick, was wrangling bull all week or something. But, okay, on a good day, on a non-Eli weirdo race day, like the luminaries that have been able to put it to him here and there, it's like Ken Roczen, Marvin Muskan is a multi-time champion in his own right. There's not a lot of those guys. I guess Dunge when Tomac was younger, maybe Jet now, Chase Sexton. Like, if Hunter Lawrence does this, how many other people are in that club? Six people?
Well,
seven? Hurling?
As Chase ever Has Chase ever caught and passed Eli and dropped him? Like, I'm sure he's passed him. You ever drop him?
I feel at 22 he answered.
Okay.
I don't know if it was specifically like it was at Southwick, but there's doubt he got the better of Eli at times.
He did. You're right. Oh, but yeah.
That's still not a lot of guys.
No, it's not. It's not. It was something. Well, JT, I asked Hunter, because I know he's more particular about bike setup because he's not an alien like Jet Lawrence. And he said that, and Dazzy has said that. I asked Hunter, so sand setup, what'd you end up doing? And he's like, nothing. We left it alone. We made a clicker change, like for Moto 2, but we had no sand setting. He rode a Kroom. You know Kroom well. They rode a Kroom and everything else, just standard stuff. I was pretty surprised. Like nothing?
Yeah, and I watched him, and the bike looked pretty good. It really did. There's been a lot of talk, I would say, going back to January of this year about the Honda not looking great. There's behind the scenes, Jet and Hunter haven't been thrilled with the motorcycle indoors or out. And I thought the bike looked good. I was watching him really close, like trying to see if it was he looked uncomfortable, the bike was doing anything. And generally, what you're looking for is the bike, is it doing something the rider doesn't expect? That's the worst thing.
Stepping out a lot.
Just unexpected things are the worst thing that can happen for a rider because you can't be confident in anything you're doing. You can't push the edge because you have no idea what's going to happen when you do. And I was just kind of watching. The bike was in tune with what he wanted to do. Wasn't stepping out. It wasn't reacting strangely. So, whether it was just the sand or whatever, maybe they, took a step overall. Kudos to the Honda team because they had it figured out this weekend.
Yeah, it was really, I thought it was funny for them to go to Kroom and then, sand ride and then never change their suspension at all. But that's really good. Eli Tomac, same thing, Southwick set first moto that we saw at High Point first moto and then we saw at Lakewood first moto. He's blazing fast. He doesn't get a great start, which that's okay, but he's blazing fast and then he just gets stuck and it's definitely he acknowledged this last week in the interview after last race at High Point. He doesn't know why and it is weird to see. And then obviously the second moto we covered that. Still got third, still ended up on the box on the day, but yeah, just not quite there yet. Just not the old Eli, just an old Eli. He's not the old Eli, he's an old Eli. I don't know. It's Weege.
But he's good sometimes.
I know. Are you coming around or no?
I don't know. I might be coming back around to my own theory that I said I would not use for Tomac.
Exactly. It's your own theory. I'm just throwing it on you.
Yeah.
I'll give you guys credit because I was not on board with this, but I don't know what to make of it because he has these opportunities and it's right in front of him. Like the what he wants, the battle for the lead, going to get the points he wants, it's all right there. Like as a racer, he can look up and when he's over jumps and his peripheral, he sees Jet, he sees the lead, he sees everything that he needs to be and he cannot get there. And he knows it as anybody. Like he has to look himself in the face and know that, right? If he started 25th, you're just like, well, I'm just shooting myself in the foot. But like it's right there and he can't do anything about it. So I think, when I watch these guys come into the tent, and I talk about this a lot, it's like I want to see their raw emotion. I want to see what they're feeling before they compose themselves and go up on the podium and do their thing. There's not a lot of like rage or anger with Eli. There's not. I think it's like acceptance because he knows that he just couldn't make it happen. Like he said he was disappointed with his mid-race pace in the first one. And I think that's the God's honest truth. He's just frustrated. He's like, he's trying and it's just not happening. So it's probably, it's really easy to be angry, but I don't even think he's that angry because just like, who am I going to be angry at? What am I going to blame? I just can't.
Yeah.
I can catch up and I can't pass the guys. So
if he gets second in the second moto, like if he just goes 2-2, I think his demeanor and I think us doing this janky review pod, we're like, okay, good ride. Yeah, good job. What are you going to do? It's Jet Lawrence. Like, good job, Eli. 2-2, right? He's won Southwick a lot. But, to go 3-3.
But it was distant. It was a
distant
one.
I mean,
that's part of it, right?
The way he was moving in Moto 1, like Lakewood and like High Point, he could have got into second, but he got a little help with Prado going down. He got a little help with, yeah.
Yeah. Part of what's so disappointing is that this is the track where we thought he might kind of break out And if anything, it was one of the worst ones. Colorado, he was at least challenging Jet, second moto. High Point, he wins a second moto. Hangtown, he wins a moto. Paula, he was all over him. Like, I struggle to find a race where he was less competitive at the front than this one. That's not good.
Yeah. It was another ride. He was second in the points. It's not the end of the world, but yeah, good job, Hunter Lawrence. Maybe not so much bad job, Eli Holt. Tomac, but good job, Hunter Lawrence. Maybe that's the.
It's not bad job.
Right.
It's the same. It's the same conversation we have with Sexton. The expectation is so high because we know what he's capable of. When you don't do that, yes, people are going to be disappointed. And there's a difference there. It's not like we're saying, oh man, he sucks. It's no. Mm-hmm. We expect the guy to be fighting for the win every time. Like, no one's saying about AP right now. Like, no one's saying, man, AP sucked this weekend. Tomac beat AP. But it's where the expectation lies is where those comments come in. And I think that's really important for whether it's Chase or Eli or these people watching it. It's a very different thing that we're saying than, you know, we're not coming down on him. It's just we know what he can do, and he did not do that.
Isn't Chad Reed basically the all-time king of the podium? And now we look back at the big picture, JT, right? And all those podiums are great, and he's heralded for it. But I'm sure you saw a lot of those podiums, JT, when he got second or third, where he didn't feel like it was the best case scenario for him.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I watched him get third in Orlando in 2007. He was like 40 seconds down to those guys. Like, it was not a happy third place. Like, it was a very angry, very frustrated, I'm going to throw my helmet out of the building. Third place.
Right. There's only a few guys that are at the level where sometimes getting third really sucks. Where, you know, there's other guys. Like you said, you put Plessinger on the podium. It's still a podium. It's still cool.
He's hooting and hollering and, you know, chugging beers.
Yeah.
Timmy was happy with third a lot. But anyways. Hey, Justin Cooper, fourth overall. I was pretty surprised at the end of the day when I looked up at the screen and you guys were running the overalls on the screen. I was like, oh, Justin Cooper. 19th to 6th in Moto 1 and 12th to 5th in Moto 2. Him and RJ got a lot of passing points. Savachi, 2 in the first Moto. But Justin Cooper, fourth overall. Good job. Because that guy gets starts and he didn't get starts. So good job. He rode well, rode hard.
Yeah. As you know, Justin Cooper, man of many words.
Yep.
we were waiting around because we did 5 interviews after the race. And there's, you know, you're obviously running the show, but there's highlights and a million things we got to get through before we get back to each interview. And I'm just like, man, like, you don't want to hear this right now, but your starts killed you today. He's like, oh, yeah, you think? I'm like, I don't have anything else. Like, you're riding great. You qualified fastest. Your riding was spectacular. But the one thing that you do is get great starts, and it killed you. He's like, he knows still, that.
Like I said, him and RJ and Savachi first moto, dude. Savachi was dead last to 12th or something. Welcome to the Jorge Prado podcast. We're on that section. He was better this weekend. He ran up front. He was in position for a podium at one point overall. The team tested with him all week. He looked much better, crashed in each moto. And then after the race, he told me, we are so far off. I mean, I'm a sand rider, and I finished P5. It's a track where I should be winning, and I know I would win with different stuff. Okay, goddamn.
He didn't have the tools. He could do it for one lap, but there's no way it would be impossible for him to, on that bike, do that speed for 35 minutes.
I said, how's the team with the communication? Everything is fine. I think they are trying their best. I'm just waiting. Okay, goddamn. Jorge Prado.
You know, the best part for me is I don't have to even say anything because he's saying everything. Like, I do think Kawasaki deserves a lot of credit because they got a lot better. And I'm sure Jorge is in there too. Like, all of them collectively were a lot better at Southwick than they've been all year. Starts were better. Speed was better. Riding was better. Everything was better. And that, you know, so I've been critical of, you know, like Cowie in general. I don't know what the problem is, or bike's slow, bike's not slow, bike's not working, bike's, I don't know. I'm going off what Prado says, and I'm looking at the results, which were horrible for him. This was a big step forward for all of them. So all of them deserve a lot of credit. And I just want to be on the front end with that because they've been taking some heat, whether it's warranted or not. I'm sure they read things and see things. I don't think it's been a very fun ride for them through four or five rounds. So this had to feel a little bit better.
I'm a four-time world champion. Last year I won 11 out of 18. Are you really telling me I'm not fast enough to win today here?
Also, I'm not sure, Steve, if he was even implying that the bike and team got much better or if it was just he's really good in sand. And
that's what I felt like.
The elevation in results was yes. He's just good enough in sand. To
yes. The week at Club MX was not a help. He's sand rider.
Well, then I'm going to say it. I think that they got better collectively. You don't go – he was so far off. I don't care if you're riding on the moon, man. You can't just be that much closer and nobody did any work to get there. Nobody helped. It was just all me. I don't believe that to be true.
One thing we have to carve out here, though, is – and I didn't think it would go this bad, so I didn't think this would come up. But the European athletes in general are more outspoken and unfiltered than we're used to in America, especially with the media. And then multiply that times three if it's a Italian or a Spanish person. And this is why in MotoGP, they just trash their motorcycles and trash the tires and trash everything because they're all Euros and they're mostly Italians and Spanish. So I think these comments, I'm sure there's a lot of truth to them, but it seems even gnarlier because we're not used to hearing it. And it might just be that Jorge is saying the things that a lot of people say in the truck, but he doesn't know the difference. And you got a microphone, Steve, and he's just going to tell you. And I was worried that he would be misinterpreted at some point for something. I didn't know he'd be getting 12th place finishes and it would lead to this. But I think we have to carve a little of that out too. I don't even know if they know how to hold back.
Hold on. So we've all been around this sport for a long time. Here, Europe, we watch everything. We're super fans on top of working. Have you heard anybody talk about their bike or team like this? Because I have
not. I mean, maybe there's a few examples, but not often.
I have not. So
no. I don't know what the blame pie is, but to me, that's part of it. This is partially cultural.
Well, I do agree that they are much more straightforward and transparent, especially in MotoGP, road racing. They do not hold back at all. They'll basically tell you, our bike cannot win at this racetrack. End of story, period. I don't care who races it.
Yep.
But for MXGP, I haven't heard somebody be as candid as Prado is right there. That's pretty aggressive to come out like that.
I went into the interview. Hello, Jorge Prado. I am Steve from Canada, and I think you rode really well.
Maybe because you did that. That's why he was so angry.
I didn't, but it was in my mind. And I'm like, this was a very good day. You crashed in each moto, and you still almost made the podium. And where you've been, this is a day to celebrate. Let's break out the pinatas and celebrate. And that was not it. This was not it. I was taken aback by his harshness.
Are pinatas a Mexican thing?
Yes, they are. Okay. But I did not get that feeling from him at all. I was like, oh, okay, goddamn. So
I think he should be in your line of thinking. I do.
He was not.
I know. I'm picking up on that.
Yeah.
Wild and clear. But I think he should have been much more optimistic about the day than it sounds like he was.
Well, he's got Chad Reed working with him, Weege, at Club. And honestly, we made a lot of jokes in some group texts because Chad is known for changes of the motorcycle. Chad is known for that belief, just what you mentioned 5 minutes ago with Chad getting smoked by 40 seconds. We've all known what kind of guy he is. And part of me wants to be like, this is going to make it worse because it's Chad and a guy who doesn't like his motorcycle. But part of me, though, so Oscar Werdemann is the crew chief for Jorge Prado, and Oscar worked with Chad in 2001 in Europe for Yonder Groot. Chad loves Oscar. And America. And Oscar went with him to 2-2, and Oscar went with him to L&M. And Oscar's a really smart suspension guy, not just a parts changer like me. He's just really smarter. So part of me is like, Chad can tell Jorge, this is the guy. You got to believe in this guy. Maybe we're not there yet, this guy can get it right, Weege. So that's part of me is like, this is a really good thing. And part of me is like, oh my God, Chad's going to just destroy the team and the bike to Jorge every single day.
That is a good point. Chad has always spoken highly of Oscar to the point where he spent his own money to hire him for the 2-2 team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe, hey, was there a Lars button in the 2-2 days? Because Lars is over there too. Maybe that was part of their team. So Chad put his money where his mouth is. I had not thought of that angle. I knew that Oscar and Chad are tight. But yes, does Chad have a lot of knowledge? Yes. Is he one of the few that can relate to what Jorge is going through? Yes. All that is true. But also, Chad has rubbed a lot of the teams he's ridden for the wrong way. And I was like, oh no, this is probably already a little rickety right here between Kawasaki and Prado. This is not going to help build the bridge. But I forgot that part. What it really comes down to, the only part that alarms me, it's not the parts, it's not the data, it's not the actual equipment. It's, does the relationship between the people, can it survive this? And you might be right. Where you would think Chad would actually hurt that, maybe, and because of Oscar, it won't be that bad.
And Theo, who's the crew chief for Anderson, but it's still involved with all the changes to the bikes, Chad loves Theo. He's praised him many times as the best data guy in the pits.
Oh, okay.
So Theo Lockwood's over there too. So
yeah.
I'm here for this. I'm here for all of this. I'm here for these interviews. I'm here for it. I'm here
One
for Chad.
Other thing on this
I'm
topic.
Here. Throw in some Chad Reed. Mix in some Oscar.
Seeing Chad with Jorge, and Jorge did praise him, so that he recommended some changes after the sight lap that worked. So, again, Chad's super knowledgeable. I'm not taking that away at all, but we just know how he's been perceived by some teams he's ridden for to the point where he had to start his own team. There was one other point I was going to make, but I don't remember.
Okay.
It was at this point.
Well,
I got to jump off.
Okay. Anything else then, JT, that came to mind for the rest of the classes, or Deegs?
No,
you want to talk about Deegs? Deegs, great.
Deegs is the man in 250, period.
Okay. All right. Jump off, but don't like close your laptop, like what we talked about.
Yep.
Okay. All right. See what happens when you do this.
Yeah.
So it says leave, and it says leave site ? Changes you made may not be saved. Should I still leave?
No, I think he means don't leave.
Well,
I mean, I can just leave it running. I just won't be in the chair.
Yeah. Don't
maybe
it leave later. Come back when we're done. Then leave.
Okay. I think you can leave, and I think it's fine, but maybe let's not risk it.
All right. I'm just going to leave it.
Okay. Let me mark it.
I thought of the other point I was going to make, so this worked
out. Yep. All right. JT's gone now. Go ahead, Weege. What your other point?
Yeah, as we're pushing late on Monday, we're pushing into real work hours here because we didn't do this Saturday. Oh, I remember the other point I was going to make. Chad and all these guys are defending Prado, saying, I got to understand how difficult this transition is. But the only reason we're not giving Prado a lot of rope on how difficult the transition is because of guys like Chad Reed, who did not need any time. And Chad Reed almost podiumed the premier class of Supercross as soon as he moved to the United States at Anaheim 1 before he fell. And then what did he do? Win 7 out of 8 125 Supercross races in his very first year. And like all the guys that moved over, Greg Albertine almost won the very first national he was in at Gainesville. Like Tortelli had one of the all-time 1-1s at Glen Helen. The problem is any of the guys that would tell us, oh, you don't understand how hard this is, we would be like, the only reason we don't is because of you. Because you showed that it can be done. It doesn't take a year or two to learn the tracks or anything. You can just... Chad Reed was racing a Kawasaki two-stroke in Europe, got in a YZ250F. Was there any transition?
Yeah, I mean, he would have won the outdoor title, but not for a phenom named James Stewart. Like,
Yeah. So that's the problem. We've just seen too many times that this shouldn't take this long. Now, Prado did also mention to you, Steve, it's not – the adjusting of the tracks is not the problem.
No, it doesn't seem like that. No.
Nope. It's just the stuff.
The motorcycle. It's – wow. Okay. All right. More to talk about here. Renthal.com. Speaking of Renthal, they're on Jorge Prado's bike. I think the rental stuff is working okay, as far as I know. I'll specifically ask if that's an issue. But rental.com, sprockets, chains, bars, grips, lock-on grips are doing great, selling well with the folks at Rental. And please check out all sorts of bars that they make, 7/8 bar, cloth bar pads, all of it, rental.com. And great mountain bike products as well. Something cool coming for mountain bikes really soon. I'm excited when these come out. And also Maxxis tires. I got the Maxxis hat on. Fast Freddy Norin runs Maxxis. He didn't make the motos. Things, the panic button for Freddy, I'm finding it. This is a man.
Yeah.
We do the re-raceables. Freddy Norin has gotten 8,000 top 10s in 450 motocross. And this year is not working out. It's not as Maxxis tires. Trust me.
You want to stamp a 9th through 11th place finish. You just get Freddy Norin on your bike outdoors.
Yeah.
Also, isn't he in position to potentially become the all-time leader in starts in a 450 motocross?
Well, if he made every race this year, he would have been tied with Dowd or won back at Dowd, but now that's even worse because he didn't.
That's what I'm saying. Not qualifying, that really hurts.
Yeah. Maxxis.com, great mountain bike tires as well. Please check them out. And they got a scoop tire. I used the scoop at Paula to go 6.6 in my regional, so there is that.
Maybe Freddie didn't use the scoop. Did he use the scoop?
He would have had to have.
Okay.
But I got my scoop from Freddie's team, so maybe they were one scoop down and Freddie didn't make the motos because it's on the back of my bike. I don't know. Maxxis.com for more information. All right, keep going. RJ Hampshire, lots of passing points for RJ. Like Justin Cooper, crash in the first turn, I think in the first moto. Second moto rode really well as well. 8-4 on the day. Congratulations to RJ. He becomes the highest finishing out of the top five group this year through five rounds. You know what I'm saying? The top five has been filled by the same guys.
Oh, yeah.
Every single week, except for 1/5 by Prado and 1/5 by Jason Anderson. Well, now we have a guy who got fourth. The second group.
Oh, I see. The highest finish.
The highest placing finish of the second group of guys. RJ Hampshire, second moto, fourth place, 8-4
on the
day.
Prado, I believe, is the first top five overall. That's not one of those.
Yes.
Five.
Yep. Absolutely.
That is crazy. RJ's been awesome. He's been great.
He has been really good. Yep. Yeah. We're going to have him on the Pulp Show tonight, and I'm interested to find out what's hurting in his body. And how he's doing, but he's been doing really well. I think he's been he's been better than I thought. And this is coming. I know he won 250 Nationals, and I know he, you know, is one of the better 250 riders. But I still think he's been better than I thought he would be.
Well, what I think this comes down to, Steve, is the 450 suits his style.
Style, maybe. Yep. Aaron Plessinger started off strong. Went backwards a little bit in Moto 1, and then Moto 2, I think he was just out of gas. Yeah.
He looked super tired.
Yep. I talked to Ian Harrison a little bit in the tower, and after we were done with Albie's stories, I was asking him about – that's my problem with these races. When I see Brooks or Peyton or Harrison or whoever, I just want to talk about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I need to be more focused on current racers. But – he said one of the things they're working with AP is that when something goes wrong, a tip over, or say he gets zapped by a couple guys, makes a mistake and gets zapped by a couple guys, he sort of can't stop the downward momentum. They have to work on that with him. If he never gets touched and he gets a great start and he rides well, everything's good. But when something upsets the apple cart a little bit, they tend to stack up a little bit. So that's something Ian Harrison said they're working on with AP. So
maybe they need to remember Coach Seiji, Shorty's old trainer.
Yeah.
Where he would send Shorty out in the middle of the desert, like without equipment, and be like, figure it out.
I did not know that happened. No, I didn't know that.
No, you were the one that told these stories. This info came from you.
Okay.
Yeah. It was one off season where he like would mess up his closet. So it like, ha, you got all your stuff the way you think you want it, but now you're going to have to figure out a way around your, I doubt that OCD is probably what Plessinger is, but maybe they need to try that. Just jack with them all week, throw everything off.
You don't think OCD is one of AP's problems?
It doesn't look it.
Doesn't issue. Yeah. Coop 7-7. Coop has gotten seventh, I think, eight times this year. Seventh
He's
is his happy spot.
6 and 7, I think, at all but like four motos or something. It's crazy.
Yeah. 7-7 for Coop. Barcia was back. 10-9 on the day. Again, like the other guys, he came from way back in the first moto. I talked to him after the race. He's happy. I said if it was anybody but you, I think everyone would wait until Southwick was over, but it's you. And he's like, yeah, man, yeah. He also acknowledged that he's done with Troy Lee Gaskas, which we knew, but he said it publicly. So,
but he also, if he's telling the truth here, Steve, he told you that he doesn't have anything yet.
Right.
At least,
yeah.
For next year.
I think he's telling the truth, yeah.
You think that's a technicality? I mean, I thought him to Ducati was done by now, but maybe it's not.
Yeah, maybe not. Good to see him back, though. It's better with Bam Bam there. Yeah.
Oh, everything is, and 10th is not bad. I mean, he told me, I talked to him before he went out for practice, and that knee injury was a lot more serious than I realized, so impressive.
Malcolm had a terrible qualifying. I don't know what happened in qualifying with Malcolm, but he was way back. So he ate a bunch of roost and went 12-10 on the day. So he was way back, both motos.
Hey, you reminded me with the roost. I know this is not supposed to be the Prado pod, but Tomac theorized. Did I lose internet? Are you there? Hello? Yo. Are we good? We back?
Oh, you're back. Yep, you're back.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, can I keep going?
Yeah, keep going. You reminded me.
You reminded me by mentioning roost. I know this is not supposed to be the Prado pod, but back on that. Tomac said he was getting roosted extra bad by Prado in any of the singles, where Prado had appeared to be purposely roosting him from the backside.
Mm-hmm.
He theorizes it probably seemed like it was on purpose, because no one else was roosting him like Prado. So I think if you talk to some MXGP guys, Prado, a great starter, I think the American racers will see that he has little tricks. Probably not tricks they like, but he has little tricks. The MXGP guys will tell you all about it.
He has angered some MXGP riders, yes. Yes,
that's
absolutely.
All. That's all I'm saying.
Hadi Kulis, 9-13. Good job. Hari was way back in Moto 2, came up to 13th, and then first Moto, he kind of started 10th and got 9th. Good job, Hari Kulis. Yeah. Yeah, I talked to him after the race a little bit. So
Bike setup.
They're better. They're in a better spot. Savacci was dead last first moto of the 13th. Crashed in the first turn. Second moto got up to 11th. So Joey, I talked to him after the race and he was happy with the way he rode, but he does want to, you know, that high point race is where he wants to be. Thinks he should be up there, and I can't argue with him. You know, he should be around
6-7 or something like that. He's capable.
Yep. Pat Jarrell, 14-14. He had a bit of a bike issue in one moto again. Bit of a bike. Cody Shock was off day for Cody, 18-12. Guillaume is hanging out after the races. I like Guillaume. Valentin Guillaume might be one of my favorite riders these days. He just comes by and hangs out now. He's talking to Davey. He's talking to the media. I don't think he's got anything to do, and he just wants to hang out. Cool guy.
Yeah, he's not even doing media. He's just hanging out. I mean, he'll do media if you want him to, but he's hanging out. And then were you there when we did the post-race show? And I'm like, can you tell which one of those guys is Euro when he was just walking through the pits? Yeah. Jean shorts, rolled up, no shirt. It's like so and, Euro.
And some scars on him that look like his operations were performed in a hostel in Romania.
That's right.
Right? Like the scars on him. Yeah. Who did those surgeries, man?
No, man. Did they use an actual Swiss Army knife on him?
I gotta ask him. Remind me to ask him, dude, what happened?
He looked like he had the Swiss flag all over his body.
Just
red and white everywhere.
Did he get a deal on a backdoor doctor? I don't know, man. Like, he's got some serious scarring going on all over his body.
You know the story at High Point where his gear didn't show up? His bag didn't make it, and then he had his gear from the previous race to wear in practice.
Oh.
And then he left the track at High Point after practice and drove to his hotel
to get his gear.
How risky is that, dude?
Wow. Yeah.
You know how bad the traffic gets at a lot of these nationals at about 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Holy shit. I didn't know that. No. Yeah. He's an awesome guy. He's just hanging out, man. It's super cool to see him. And there was another battle, another Pacharel Guillaume battle in the second moto. I tweeted it out. It was fantastic. He did tell me, Valentin did tell me, He's like, it's hot. It's getting me. And I'm like, brother, just wait. Just wait.
I just wrote, go ahead. Subscribe to RacerX, everybody. See this thing right here? I got this is what you get if you subscribe. This is going to tie into this. This is a cell phone holder. A Cherubis makes this. Look, your cell phone goes in it. This is a miniature bike stand that fits a cell phone. We'll give you that for free if you subscribe. And I just finished an article in the new issue that will come out where I basically talked to Locurcio, Pacharel, Guillaume, Kulas, Cody Shock, Malcolm about these like 10 through 16 insane battles, which are way better than the battles for the lead every week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same guys, but it's great to watch.
Every week it's the same guys, the same five or six going at it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's neat to watch. Yeah, because I don't think this Southwick would even rank in my top 10 of hottest Southwicks I've ever been to. Oh. And Guillaume is like, hot. And I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Lorenzo, speaking of Lorenzo, good job. He's a good sand rider. We were talking about him in Pulp MX Fantasy. Okay. He's had good results in Southwick before, 15-16 for him. Cornelius Tondal. He's a GP rider. He's doing a few nationals. He's a JW Honda rider. It's a Dutch team over there. And so he's pitted off to the side at Honda. And so the Honda guys are helping him. And he was really good early in Moto One. And then, dude, he got tired.
And good at qualifying. Yeah.
His nickname is Corn Dog. The Honda guys call him Corn Dog, Cornelius. Oh. And they're making jokes about the corn dog being cooked at the end of the moto. Yeah.
Oh.
And he crashed second moto, hurt his neck, and then pulled off. I had him in fantasy. I was very angry, but I'm okay now that I know that he crashed and hurt his neck or whatever. So it's fine. Also, JT's not here, but sources tell me that Corn Dog's bike is the one JT will be doing the whole shot challenge on.
Yeah, Honda gave him a bike, but I believe it's a completely stock bike.
Yeah, yeah, so but it will have
the production bike.
But it will have, say, six motos of it ridden hard.
Oh.
By a GP rider, so I'm really, I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take
it. You might tell him, don't just leave that clutch in there, man. Just leave.
Yep,
it.
Grant Harlan said he's never scored points at Southwick in both motos before, so 17-17 for Hardog.
Wow.
Jason Anderson had an illness or a virus, and didn't finish either moto. Pulled out, and this is officially off the rails for Anderson this season because didn't finish the Lakewood, didn't finish here. Tough deal. Had a nice high point, I guess. But what's weird though, Weege, is like, and I don't know. I don't know Jason at all. We don't talk much, but he's pulled out of both motos with an illness, and then I saw him hanging out after the races, like at the end of the. He pulled out of the second 450 moto. Then I saw him in street clothes. After the end of the moto, by the start.
Huh. I think the only reason I have any insight on this is because he actually did an interview with Will Christian between motos as they were picking gates for the second 450 moto.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. And my theory is here, he's fine just hanging out, but then when he really starts pushing, that's when he starts throwing up and things like that. So maybe an hour after the moto, he's like, yeah, I'm fine. I just, my heart rate goes to 180 and I get really hot. Then I'll start puking again. That's all I could think of.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Nichols DNF both motos. Not good for Colt Nichols. Shout out Joey Crown. First national in years. Hurt his eye. Couldn't see in his eye, and maybe it's gotten better. I don't know, but he was running top 15 for a while, Joey Crown.
Yeah, so. Crown is a Michigan guy, so he told me he's using this as his ramp up. Red Bud is the real focus.
Also, I talked to Barry Carson a little bit in the tower. It's fantastic, Weech.
He's a beauty.
It was great. He is a beauty. How many times do you think Barry's raced Southwick?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I saw Corey down there early in the day, and I'm like, oh, there's Barry. Hey, do you think Barry – is Barry dyeing his hair? Is he platinum blonde? Is that natural?
I never really noticed. Yeah, I don't know.
It really stuck out. Now, maybe he's just RM Army. Like, he's ridden Suzuki's so much that his hair is beginning to, like, turn yellow. Maybe.
Yep.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, he's been in touch with the plastic so much that it seeps in.
It just seeps through.
The molecules seeps in.
Yeah. You know how like a mechanic like cannot, like a real mechanic, not like what you did, like a car mechanic, like they just have grease under their nails for life. It'll never go away.
Yep.
So that's Barry. He's just yellow.
Yeah. Legend. All right. Thank you to Fly Racing, flyracing.com. Use the code PULPMX to check out. Thank you to Fly, Renthal, Maxxis, motorsport.com as well. OEM and aftermarket parts, great prices. They got an ultimate ride sweepstakes going on now, giving away a YZ450F. God, Yamaha guys, once again, supporting everything. Check out motorsport.com. Like I said, great guys, and go through the banner on PulpMX to help us out. The number one online ordering place in the world, including Amazon and everywhere, is motorsport.com. That's right. I said it. Renthal, Maxxis, Fly
parts
Racing.
For everything?
Everything in the world.
Oh, wow.
The world. Yep.
Dang.
Brunt work boots also. Jelly, Eli Tomac's mechanic. He is a Brunt guy. Pedro is a Brunt guy. There's a lot of Brunt work boots out there because those guys are real workers, not like me. I wear flip-flops. But if you want Brunt work boots, they got bruntworkwear.com, code PulpMX to save. Great boots, great company. They got a lot of products, and the PulpMX code will save with you with Brunt. And again, I would love to tell you some real-world test that I had with Brunt work boots. Unfortunately, I have none. Nothing. I'm a podcaster. Pookie met some the New Kids on Block are in town, right? And they're going to a bunch of concerts. I'm going broke, but she's meeting all these fans, and she told these people,
blockheads.
These chicks that the blockheads.
Yeah.
She told these people that she met that her husband was a podcaster, and I don't know how I feel about that.
They certainly don't think he's successful. I can guarantee
no.
you that's not the first
no.
thing they associate. Yeah. Who no. isn't a podcaster? Sure. Is he a YouTuber?
Yeah. My husband's a podcaster, right? So
they've got to be wondering how she can afford all these tickets.
But I don't feel like journalist is appropriate either.
No.
So
definitely
know?
Not.
Anyways.
Are you really saying what are you saying? She's spending a lot of money on the concert?
Yeah. Yes.
Anybody tickets. Else in your household do that?
No.
Oh, really? Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. All right. 250 class. We don't got a lot of
Hold
time
on,
here.
We got one other dude to mention
what?
Here.
What?
Josh Toth, the GNCC racer.
Oh, yeah. Good job, Toth. He didn't get in, I guess, in qualifying, right?
He did because the same dude who they thought had the fast qualifying lap last year, Robinson, had his lap taken away because he only did like half of the track last year. He once
Are
again
serious?
Had his lap taken away. That was one down.
He did it again. The same guy.
I don't know what he did, but he had his lap taken away again. And this is legit because last year I DM'd the guy and I was like, did you have the fastest qualifying time? And he's like, no, no shot, man. I literally pulled over to the side of the track and just wanted to take the checkers. And I guess I did that in 2 minutes and 1 second exactly. And it gave me the fast time. This year, he had his lap pulled again. Then Jeff Walker jumped on a red cross. He got his lap pulled, and it moved Toth to 36th instead of 38th. He was in. Now, Toth won the Snowshoe GNCC last weekend. I did a podcast with him on my own Search Racer X Podcast Network. But did you see this, Steve? He then drove to an Enduro on Sunday.
I heard he was doing this, yes.
And he won.
He won that too. Wow.
He won the Enduro.
So he won GNCC, qualified for Southwick, raced two motos, then won the Enduro the next day. Wow.
Yes. And his goal was, he rides for Stu Baylor's team, and his goal was to still beat Stu. I said, why is the team letting you do this? And he's like, well, my team owner wants to beat me at the Enduro. So he's probably like, yeah, go wear yourself out at Southwick.
Mm-hmm.
But then Toth won anyway.
Yeah, suck it, Stu.
Yeah.
Stu's not even the number one. Stu Baylor Racing. And Stu Baylor's not even the number one rider on Stu Baylor Racing. Yep.
No.
Nope.
Very
Sorry,
impressive.
Stu. Yep.
Yep.
Hope he hears this. Hope we're getting an angry text from him.
Enjoy.
He never did send me that Trump plastic he said he was going to do. Thank God.
He's amazing.
Okay. All right. 250s. Yeah, Deegs. Deegs won again. Deegs dominated. Deegs crushed it. It was maybe the biggest win of the year for him. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no one's even close. I don't even think we're not getting the trash talk anymore because I think it's like fruitless. It's pointless. It's like what? Why does he even need to say anything about these guys?
Yeah. Right? Is that what it is? Yeah.
I think it's just like what is even the is like a cat toying with a mouse at this point. Like what's the
right? He was great. He was fantastic. He looked like he, you know, like just like cruising, jumping, landing in the turns with his leg out, just wheeling, just, you know?
Yeah, he's – the only thing, his first year he was really good, but I was like, he's getting good results, but I don't see him doing anything that's, like, mind-boggling. But I feel like I see stuff all the time now where I'm like, how did he just do that? Or how did he just do that? Like, my kid and I were going back. We were watching drone footage from, like, Hangtown when he was passing dudes on the outside, and I'm like, there's just two lines in this corner. How did he go – 30% faster in the other line. Like, you're starting to see stuff all the time where you're like, oh, that was interesting.
Yeah, he was, great. Tom Vial, 3-3. Tom's first moto after he fell was great. Tom rode amazing. This was Tom's best race of the year.
Oh, yeah. He was hauling.
He was rode really well. 3-3 on the day. 10th.
I think that hurt him in the second moto.
Yeah. Kitchen, second moto. Kitch thought he had something for Deegs. Kitch is like, I'm gonna put heat in Deegs' kitchen, is what Kitch was thinking. And then I don't know, man. I read his Instagram today. I was gonna text him, I forgot, but I read his Instagram. He cramped up, because then he had like a 2.8. Yeah, he had like a 2.18 or something.
Oh, it was bad.
It was bad. And then then he picked it back up. I guess the cramps went away, because then his lap times got better.
You just jumped into the world of running, Steve. Have you gotten side stitch?
No, I have not.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's what was happening. His stomach is cramping, whatever. His mechanic put question mark. Did you ever
saw
do that?
Yes.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah, I have. I think I have.
You have?
Yeah, I have.
But he did pull it back together. I didn't have
He did. Yeah.
He needs to talk to Plessinger.
Yeah, he got it back together, and he started putting laps in again. But it was a – he stayed within 3 seconds of Deegs, I think, for a bit. And I even tweeted, like, oh, Kitch. And then literally as I tweeted that, it started going south. But still, I mean, hey, 2-4, he'll take it, right? Mosman, 4-5. I told him after the race, hey, man, great race. You finally held it together for two motos. You deserve this. And he said, actually, I lost a position in the moto because my bike started going again in the first moto. So we had bike issues again in the first moto and dropped back on the last lap to fourth. And then the second moto, he came from, I don't know, 15th to 5th or 10th to 5th, something like that. Mosman, everybody, good job. He's quietly been really good.
Yeah, I don't know. Would he have had a podium? Because he had – Kitchen couldn't get him in the first moto, and I think Kitchen surrendered, and he was going to get second, Mosman, and then he went back to fourth. And I don't know. Those – Kitchen gaining a spot.
Oh, I thought he was in third. I thought he was in third when that happened. He was in second?
No, there were a bunch – Kitchen made a bunch of runs at him, and all he ended up getting for that was a bunch of roost. And I think it was over. At that point,
so he went from second to fourth. Fuck
yeah! I think that might have cost him a podium.
I asked him about his net ride next year, and he told me that 2 weeks ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, Bobby Reagan called him and thought he should maybe retire. It wasn't working out, and maybe he should think about retiring. Okay. And then he told me that Bobby called him last week and said, "I don't know, man. You're riding really good. You put on some podiums. Maybe we'll get you back on." Bobby Reagan, everybody.
Checks out.
Yep.
I believe both.
Good job for Mosman, though. It's a really cool story. I hope he holds it together. He told me, he said, I've never really held it together this long. And I'm like, yeah, no, you haven't.
That is true, actually. Yeah, you're right.
You know, so good job for Mosman, for sure. Fourth overall. Joe Schmoda's second moto was great.
Oh, that's a tradition at Southwick. I did not realize this.
Yeah.
That he has a bad first moto, great second moto every year at this track. Did it again.
Yeah, did it again.
Well, he crashed twice. First turn and then again in Moto 1. He didn't ride bad. But
no, his jersey was all ripped. He was way back.
Oh, wow.
Harup, 5-6. We knew he'd be good. He qualified well. He passed. His fitness got him about 4 spots in Moto 2. Just grinding away at these guys. Jalik went down. Marchbanks, Hammaker. Just his fitness got him 3 or 4 spots. He wasn't really riding fast, just stayed upright and wore those guys down.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Although I know you have some stories about Swole coming up.
Yeah. Swole crashed. Swole was 4th, 5th in Moto 2 and looking great, and then crashed – just past the Buckley berm And then he said on his Instagram he crashed again before the finish. So he, Jalik went from like 4th to 15th on the last lap.
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
Yeah.
Marchbanks, Hammaker, Masterpool, George, Parker Ross was good. Good job, Parker Ross.
That is true. 13-10 for 12th.
Yep. Signs of life from Thrasher in a bit, 12-16. He had some bike problems too, Mosman told me.
Okay.
You're not having... Well, dude, it was so bad to start.
I don't know. We had the same discussion for High Point with the first.
We did.
Yeah.
You know who's got no signs of life, though, is Julien Bomer.
Oh.
The train is off the tracks. I don't know what's going on.
We actually, speaking of life, we saw his life definitely flash before his eyes. So one of the motos, I believe it's 250 Moto 1, we now have a window on our trailer, which we didn't have for years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, Steve, but one year our monitors went out Southwick, and we could not see the start.
I heard about this, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now we can see. So Deegs, I think, honestly, he might have already done his interview. He was so far ahead. Bomer and Fortner were the last guys on the lead lap, but that's like 3 minutes, especially if they're cruising in the lap. They might already be 2 minutes behind, and they're cruising last lap. Bomer is all by himself, man. There's literally no one on the track in front of him for him to even catch. And he starts swapping on this uphill, and we're like, oh! And then it goes back the other way, and we're like, oh! And he had like three unbelievable saves, and then we look, and there's no one literally on the track in front of him. And then Fortner is another quarter lap behind all by himself, just rolling around in first gear. And I'm like, dude, Bomer almost died practically on a sight lap. To me, that sums up how the day went for him.
Yeah. It's been bad. And the High Point, of course, he took that handlebar to the face. And yeah, it's not been good. Oh, by the way, and that reminds me, Bryce Shelley crashed in the same spot just past mechanics area, going up that hill in both motos. Almost the exact same spot, Bryce Shelley. He'd been going, oh, man, I hate my life.
I feel like Bomer has been really trying to push back on this. I'm not just good on a hard pack thing, but he can no longer do that. Like, it's fine. It's only his second year as a pro. Just admit he's got some things to work on. That's fine.
He was pretty good last year for a rookie, even back east.
He's getting like eighth-ish every week.
Yep. He's not getting eighth-ish right now.
Well, you just think of where he was at round one, where he was like podium guy, mm-hmm. right?
He led laps. Didn't he lead laps at Paula?
So compare it to that, and it's like, ooh. I mean, he's great. He'll be fine. But
yeah,
been rough here lately.
Yeah, he'll figure it out. TJ Albright got picked up by Phoenix Honda for the rest of the year. That's awesome. Good job, TJ. Yeah,
I did not have in the bingo card.
He's a good dude. I mean, was Del Nicky next? Who was after TJ for a pickup?
I didn't know Phoenix, which has voluntarily not raced nationals in past years. They have to have fill-in dudes?
I guess, yeah. That's the word on the street.
What, Romano and Towers have knee injuries. Evan Ferry?
No, Evan had to have another surgery on something else. Yeah.
No, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Jeez. Unbelievable. Fedortsov did pretty well.
Yeah. Yep. Had him on the post-race show. Basically, I'll sum it up. It's really, really tough. Pros are tough.
Yeah. Just
learning a lot.
Yeah, I bet. By the way, I know Club MX was going after Dax Benick. I heard yesterday he signed with Husky.
So, he's out at Star?
Yeah, he's out at Star. Signed with Husky.
So this means there is going to be a Husky
team? Well, that part I don't know. Like, someone told me he signed with Husky, but then I'm like, wait, I think that might be a Gas thing? I don't know. I think there's only one brand going. I don't know which brand. I heard it was Gas.
That has been the one thing that's been hard to pin down.
Yeah, don't know which color the KTM will be next year. The KTM will be red or white. I don't think there's red and white KTMs.
Yeah, maybe not.
Right.
So what does that mean for Ryder D and Cochran?
Ryder D, I think he's got a deal to go back. Yeah. Cochran's out.
Okay.
Which, by the way, he separated his shoulder. He separated his shoulder. He's had a good season. Bummer to see. Casey Cochran.
Yeah.
He goes on Gamer Corner with Kellen and then has a great race, but then hurts his shoulder.
No.
I wonder if that's going to affect his Gamer Corner skills.
Maybe it's therapy.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
All right, anything else 250-wise? Deeks? Great.
No, I don't think. I think everybody, other guys that struggled, they've had struggles the whole time.
Yeah.
I do want to give credit to some of the Southwick locals. When it became known that the 450s were going to race first, a lot of the top local Southwick dudes this year, they stuck with 250s. Almost all the top guys stuck. I thought they were all going to jump just to get that mm-hmm. B practice at the beginning of the day, but they didn't.
And I did think La Russa was going to make it in. I thought with a smoother track, Tony was going to make it in, but no go.
You know, I think that smooth track thing.
He's 54 years old.
He's 54. I think the smooth track thing is a little overrated only because everyone knows it. Like, every dude in that I watch that practice closely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, La Russa can benefit from the smooth track, but there's like 40 other guys also
at the
same time benefiting from the smooth track. So he's not out there by himself. Yeah. I watch Jason Brooks, like, I mean, Evel Knievel, like, he knew, like, these three laps are what I got, and it worked. He was, like, seventh quickest. Like, he was going for it. So it's not – that's the problem. It's not just La Russa who's going for it on that smooth track.
Do you – I talked to Davey a little bit about this in the morning. Do you – are you siding with our buddy Blair on the we got to change qualifying at Southwick to stop this unseeded group getting in, either 250s or 450s?
No, I wouldn't side with that.
Okay. I don't either. But Daniel Blair says we need to change it.
It's one of the cool wrinkles.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, I don't I feel like you get in trouble if you try to – it's just sports. It's just sports, people. Sometimes crazy stuff happens. And, that's
and sometimes life isn't fair for factory riders, and sometimes life isn't fair for privateers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Exactly.
And it's a great story. And when one of those guys qualifies well or qualifies first – people don't boo. They think it's fun. It's just a neat, interesting thing. And we're not trying to cure cancer here. So we don't have to always find the very best methods. Sometimes it's just different, and different is cool.
I told Davey, I said, you're going to stick to your guns on that? He's like, yep. And I said, but same with the Loretta spoons, huh? And he goes, yep. I said, well, we're going to have to agree to disagree on the Loretta spoons, sir. But anyways.
I think you could make a better case why the spoons at Loretta's isn't the best process.
Right.
Because to me, this is one race a year. And in the end, that doesn't have a massive bearing, I think, on how the results at Southwick turn out at the end of the day. But I think people could make a case that it is messing up their Loretta's. And the Loretta's one a year thing, like, literally does change lives and careers. It's not like one of the Southwick locals going fast
and
changing
there is
the career for one of the pro factory guys.
And there is a way to fix Loretta. Like, you can fix Loretta's very easily. You can get rid of the spoons very easily by just taking regional results. Boom. Done. No problem.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right.
I thought you were going to say just use the transponders.
No. I'm with Davey on the transponders. Like, let's not make the practice, you know, gnarly and all that. So just take regional results. So there'll be four guys, because there's however many regions there are.
Yeah.
There'll be eight guys with number one pick, and then you'll go the next one or whatever. So,
no, I think one argument there, going back to, I guess, the point I'm making, is sometimes when things aren't quite perfect, I think that's almost what it's designed to prove at Loretta's. Like, hey, you're going to have some adversity someday as a pro, so we're going to see how you deal with adversity now as an amateur. It's supposed to rain.
Right.
You're supposed to get screwed with what time your race takes place, blah, 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 bad gate picks. It goes back to that Plessinger convo, I guess.
Yeah.
You're supposed to show the industry you can handle stuff not going your way.
But a couple things before we go here on the Fly Racing Racer X Southwick review. Thank you for being patient with us. Again, JT's not here, but trust me, it was all JT's fault why this is late. Code PulpMX to save at Fly Racing, flyracing.com. Code PulpMX to save. A couple things before we go. Weege, I never saw Doug Henry, John Dowd, Keith Johnson, JoJo. Never saw any of these guys. Really bum. They're legends, all of them. I even told JoJo, text me when you're here, JoJo. And he said yes. And nothing. I never saw any of the Ripas legends.
That's wild. I did see Doug, and I talked to JoJo. I didn't see Dowd or Treddy. I didn't see Keith Johnson. I saw his dad.
KJ,
but yeah, they were
Treddy,
there. I don't know how you
did. Oh, bummer. Bummer. That's part of why I love going to Southwick, is seeing those guys for sure.
Absolutely. So. How cool is it even when you drive around and you, like, see the signs for, like, the towns? Like, if you drive past a sign for Chicopee and you're like, ah, oh, Dowdy.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, there was a guy from Southwick. I know there's a few guys, but there was I think somebody got in. Oh, yeah, Chris Corey from Southwick, Mass.
Oh.
Chris Corey. Oh. He went 33-30. Shout out, Chris Corey. Lives in Southwick.
The current GNCC champ, Johnny Girard from Southwick.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and before we go, Aiden Zing, a promising Team Green kid, really bummed me out. I heard this midday Saturday, got a text about it, and I just talked to Davey to confirm it, and he said, yep, and real bummer. I got to know him a little bit because Paula Amateur Day for the National, and then Paula Regional. He was at both of those. He's buddies with Kiefer, Aiden Kiefer, right? And so he was around, and he apparently listened to the show, watched the show. So I had some few conversations with him. Seems like a great kid. Rest in peace, man. Absolutely terrible. 16 years old, crashed at Mammoth. And, I mean, there's nothing you can say. Just part of the sport, unfortunately, terrible. And, our thoughts are with the family and friends.
Yeah, I met him I might have met him through the years, but at Loretta's last year, he did really well. And Phil actually posted a clip of us interviewing him.
I saw that on
the Fox Radio. But I'm not even going to pretend to say I really knew him personally, like people on the West Coast did. That is terrible. And honestly, I really haven't even been able to respond because it's just it's more than I can even figure out or understand. But I will say, when you say, there's nothing we can do, it's part of the sport. I feel like it's not actually. I feel like one of the things at motocross that you do not sign up for is that. We have seen a lot of guys, I'm going to get dark here, we've seen a lot of guys get paralyzed. And I think people know when you race a motocross bike, that is something that can happen. That is what you are signing up for. Or concussions or surgeries or broken bones, whatever. I feel like this is not what people think they're signing up for. Other forms of racing, yes. This is a real problem. And it could just be a one in a million. It could. I don't take it lightly, man. I don't think this is part of the sport. I think that's always been one of the good things about motocross.
I think people passed away in two-stroke days, and, you know, I mean, we had deaths.
I guess. I don't know, man. I don't know what the solution is, but I think about this all the time, this sport. Mm-hmm. What did we say at the very top of the show? The thing keeps evolving. Some scientists could tell you that if they're averaging 31 miles an hour where they used to go 23 somewhere, that's exponentially higher everything. And, I've said this before. I feel like guys used to break their wrist, break their arm, break their leg. Now it's always like, it's like 9 broken bones. Huge things. And I'm just like, well.
Yeah, chest injuries and lungs and ribs.
Yeah, it's like, here's my list of things that I'm getting fixed. And I'm like, what happened to just breaking your arm? But everything's faster, dude. Everything's faster. And that's everything. Your phone is better than the phone you used to have, and your computer's better, and your TV's better, and your car is better. Everything gets better, which is great, kind of, but better isn't always better. It just makes me wonder. And maybe I shouldn't be taking one incident and trying to extrapolate anything from it, but I'm like, dude, that's not what anyone is signing up for, I don't feel, when they race motocross.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
I don't.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I don't know the specifics of Aiden's injury, his crash. So I don't know if the speed of the motorcycle, the speed of the crash, affected
neither.
It. Yeah, I don't know. But
I don't. Yes.
But on another side, why are we like the only motorsport? I mean, we have a CC limit, but we got nothing else. We got nothing else to, you know, topple horsepower limits or anything else.
We have a CC limit, but the CC limit doesn't. What is it accomplishing? And I mean, I find it funny when we talk about Drew Adams' Kitchen and Marchbanks being huge and heavy on a 250F. And I'm like, where's the 250F of 2025 compared to a KX 250 two-stroke premier class bike from 30 years ago? Like whatever LaRocco and Kudrowski and Jeff Ward race. Well, is it that much?
Yeah, short? I mean, or even when I was a mechanic, our bikes were putting out 50 horsepower, 51 horsepower. And I guarantee you 250Fs are putting out more than that.
Right. So what we're like, we're just using the same old, this is the small, slow bike class thing. But in reality, it might be as fast as what we thought of as the fast bike class not that long ago. I don't know if that has anything to do with what happened here. Any one incident is a dumb thing to try to create a whole bunch of rules or regulations about. But I don't know. To me, I mean, I got a kid. And to me, I'm like, what they're doing now, I swear it's not just me getting older and more conservative. I'm just like, I don't feel that the risks were what they were. There was always risks for damn sure, but I don't feel like they were these risks.
No, I think I'd agree with you. Agree with you. And we don't, like I said, other sports, drag racing, MotoGP, NASCAR, IndyCar, name a motorsport that hasn't governed rules for horsepower and what you can make and how it's delivered or whatever, you know? Yeah.
And it's complicated, we don't do anything here, because this is the only one that has a true showroom floor that you have to have a production schedule plan that goes 3 or 5 years in advance that have to fit these rules of racing. And we saw what a disaster it was to change it one time with these four strokes. I mean, that was not smooth at all. But I mean, it makes me think twice. Totally makes me think twice. Which,
about riding? Like, about you riding?
Maybe not me, because look, it doesn't matter what bike I'm on, I'm not gonna go that fast.
Yep.
But yeah, I got a kid, like, makes me think twice about it, and I don't feel like in 1992 that was something you thought about.
Yeah. But then we didn't hear as much about injuries and passing away because of no internet and no social media. So there is that. I'm with you. Yeah. We need better leadership when it comes to horsepower and rules and everything else. And I don't know if you want to let the teams do that yet. But yeah, we need some better leadership with everybody, I think, to what the future is, because we seem to be not reacting. We had a sound rule come in and then we decided to not enforce it. But it was supposed to be enforced, and production bikes next year are coming out with mufflers that meet the sound rule, and now it's not being enforced. And some manufacturers are like, "Hey, man, what happened to the rule of sound?" And I don't think the rule should be passed. Don't get me wrong; I'm not on the side of it passing. But if you're going to commit to something and then back out of it when the OEMs have already made a plan, then the OEMs are like, "Hey, man,
that was the problem."
Yeah.
Some liked it, some didn't. Right.
So.
Here's what the actual reasoning why something like this is hard to do. We talked about the evolution of things. You have a group of people who every day are trying to think of how to make the mousetrap better. The trainers, the riders, the teams, the technicians, they're all trying to find a way to make the thing better. So to take anyone of that mindset, that one track always get better mindset, and say, now we need to come up with a bunch of ways to make it worse, they're never going to think that's good. It's the job of every person on every team to make the motorcycle better. And the rider is trying to get better. Anything you propose that would potentially make it worse, they're going to think is dumb. So that's why you're fighting an uphill battle to do it.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. But R.I.P. Aiden Zing. Seemed like a cool kid. And
Yeah,
sucks sometimes, for sure.
Really bad.
All right. Listen, thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And appreciate it. Thanks for staying with us, even though this one came out a little bit late. And Weej, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Thank you to Fly Racing, flyracing.com, Renthal, Maxxis, Brunt Workwear, Onyx Maps. Weej, we forgot the Onyx read.
500,000 miles of trails.
Sorry, Onyx.
Onyx Off-Road in the App Store. Yep.
All right. Check out Onyx, please. We're sorry. All right. Stick around, and we will see you guys next week. It's Red Bud, Antonio Caroli time. Can't wait. Ducati time. Should be great. All right, everybody. Thanks, Weej.
See ya.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Motorsport.com, Renthal, on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change.